Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Josh Hicks joins us. He's a partner with McDonald Corano and was a former chief of staff to Governor Jim Gibbons. For the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
From your house to the White House, the folks at D&D Roofing can get it fixed with their eyes closed.
Retail's impact on Nevada's economy? Enormous. 8,600 businesses, large and small, employing 145,000 workers. And last fiscal year, retail paid tax on nearly $60 billion in sales. We're the Retail Association of Nevada. We support retail, we help it grow, and we mean business.
RANNV.org.
Pro Group Management is the place where companies can find workers' comp solutions that are designed to meet their specific business requirements. As regulations evolve, Pro Group takes a proactive approach to clear the path to make sure your business stays ahead of the curve. Knowing your workers' comp program is optimized, you can focus on other important matters related to your growing business. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Safety is the number one priority for the trucking industry. Over $7 billion a year is spent on technology, like this electronic eye, that will apply the brakes automatically. But the most important factor for safety is the truck driver. These hardworking men and women who safely move over 70% of our nation's freight and 94% of Nevada's. We thank you because trucks move America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're absolutely delighted to welcome back to the program Josh Hicks. He's a partner with McDonald Corano, former chief of staff for Governor Gibbons. Absolute pleasure to have you back on the program, sir.
Sam, thank you. It's great to be back. It's been a while, and happy to be back here.
I wanted to start out with the conversation that the whole nation is having, perhaps the whole world is having, about these mass shootings over this past weekend and what we've seen over the past couple of years. And it seems to me that, you know, I come from England. That was where I was born and raised, not a gun society. I came to this country. I'm not against guns. I don't want a gun for myself, but I'm not against guns at all. I can see where people, hunters, love guns. People who go out shooting for practice enjoy having guns, going to shooting ranges. All kinds of things that are normal behavior and with normal people. The rural lifestyle in Nevada lends itself to gun ownership. So there's a huge side that is pro-gun, and I understand that totally. Then I look at the madness of what's happened in the last week, but I also look at the third side, if you can call it a triangle, and say you have 300 million people, 320 million people approximately in this country, you have that many guns in this country. To stop what's happening, the horse left the barn a long time ago. Maybe we can do things that will affect future generations, but I don't believe there's anything we can do that affects the mentally ill now. I want to get your thoughts on this.
Sure. We had to start with guns. But yeah, you know, I know for myself, many of my family friends in Nevada, who grew up in Nevada, you know, we grew up with guns. We grew up with a healthy respect for guns. It was normal. Guns were part of hunting. They were part of recreation. But they were always safely handled. They were always safely secured. And I don't think you could ever even imagine using a gun in a violent fashion or even in a reckless fashion. And so when you see these kind of things, it's just so strange to see that there's so many people out there. But your point is right. I mean, there's so many guns out there. There's so many people who clearly weren't raised with a respect for guns or safety of guns. And it's a very serious problem. And, you know, it's one of those things there's a lot of smarter people than me who could figure it out. I don't know what the answer to that is. Mental health is certainly part of it. I tend to think there's a lot of the ability for people who might be inclined to do something to get support or even provoked for it on, through internet chat sites and social media and things like that. It seems like a lot of these people kind of have that same kind of background where maybe they're pushed into these kind of things. I don't know what the answer is, but it does certainly seem to be getting worse, not better.
Although, if we look at it from a historical point of view, back in, I believe it was the early 90s, it might have been the late 80s, we had a couple of bombings at BLM facilities here in Northern Nevada. At the time, I interviewed a professor from UNR who specialized in cults and said that there were plenty of cults alive and well and living in the state of Nevada. They just weren't doing anything to attract attention to themselves, but mm-hmm. It wasn't that they didn't exist. The Southern Poverty Law Group can certainly point out hate groups that have existed. So this isn't anything new. I mean, certainly in the 20th century and moving into the 20th century, there are lots of disaffected groups in this country for one reason or another that feel, and this has nothing to do with international terrorism. This is domestic terrorism.
Sure.
What's your thought on that?
Well, I was reading an interesting article over the weekend, like everybody in the country, I think, watching what was going on and trying to understand it and process it. And it was about law enforcement's challenges with many of these shooters, precisely because they're not affiliated with these kind of groups. And law enforcement tends to have a better ability to kind of track more organized groups and infiltrate those kind of groups and see what's going on with those groups. But these people who are kind of the loners, who maybe don't have affiliations, who don't have criminal backgrounds so they can pass background checks, those are the people that I think are, those are the dangerous people, and those are the people that's just, they're completely under the radar until something like that happens.
Yeah, and nine times out of 10, he just seemed like such a nice person, very quiet, kept to himself, herself, whatever. I mean, it's not a new story. People, the president, as we're taping this, was on television this morning addressing this issue. One of the things he brought up was violent video games. And I thought to myself, I don't know, that seems like such a stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, I realize that the government is looking and the president is looking for anything that can calm this down, that can calm the nation down, give a sense of security to the nation. But I thought, man, video games have been around a long time. Doesn't seem to me that, any more than violent movies, is this an attack on Hollywood? Is this an attack on the entertainment industry?
Yeah, I've always thought that's a little bit of a stretch, too. Violent video games, any kind of video games have been around. I mean, I remember, when I was a kid growing up, the big thing was music and heavy metal music,
right,
and gangster
Tip of Gore.
Right, and that those were supposedly provoking violent incidents. And, I don't think they really were. It was just, it was just the thing of the day. And I don't mean to minimize some of these video games because there certainly are some very more violent ones, but, there's got to be more than that I think is really at the root of this.
And I would much rather have somebody play a violent video game than enact it in real life.
Sure.
If that's the way you get out of your system. Yeah. Let's take a break. More with Josh Hicks when we come back.
Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot with over 450 of the latest slots and video games. Sully's Sports Bar, the Dining Car Restaurant, William Hill Sportsbook, and the Tamarack Steakhouse and Lounge. We're just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
Yeah.
Because of UMC, I'm putting my free time to good use.
Because of UMC, she keeps me on my toes.
Because of UMC and this guy, I'm here.
UMC, the highest level of care in Nevada.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature? Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
The Tamarack Junction Steakhouse is known for signature steaks, handcrafted cocktails, and world-class wines. Join us Thursdays and Friday nights from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Steakhouse Lounge for live music, gourmet plates, and well-priced wines just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
Back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Josh Hicks. He's a partner with McDonald Carano. I want to take you back, what, about 12 years now, to the Gibbons administration, Jim Gibbons administration. You were one of the last chief of staffs, if not the last chief of staff.
I was second to last.
Second to last, yeah. Chief of staff to Governor Gibbons. Obviously, over time, Governor Gibbons has taken a lot of heat one way and another and has chosen to stay out of the media. He has had absolutely nothing to do with the media since he left office. But he comes back into the media because of this lawsuit that has been filed by the Retail Association, Nevada Trucking Association, Car Dealers Association, and others about this two-thirds ruling that at the legislature, the Legislative Council Bureau said you didn't have to have this in these two particular issues, and this suit is saying, oh, yes, you do. Let me get your thoughts on this.
Sure. Well, as a lawyer, it's a fascinating issue. If you go back, the two-thirds requirement was put in our state constitution.
And I should mention, by Jim Gibbons, I mean, it was his initiative.
It was his initiative. He was promoting it. He was kind of using that, for political reasons, but it's also, it was supported by the people. 1994, 1996, the people of the state voted for it. It's now part of the constitution. It's probably, arguably it's had the most impact on state level politics in the last, since it's been enacted by requiring that supermajority. And, it's had its kind of ups and downs. It had a challenge relatively quickly after it came out, which came into the Gwynn v. legislature case. And the legislature couldn't agree on how to fund the proposal for education. And the Supreme Court came in and basically invalidated the two-thirds requirement in light of the requirement to fund education. And then that got overruled. It was roundly criticized in legal circles and ended up getting overruled by the court a few years later. And the two-thirds rule has been pretty kind of quiet since then. It's kind of just cruised along. There hasn't been too much controversy. Every now and then there was some inside stuff about whether one bill should be a two-thirds bill or not. But relatively speaking, most bills, everyone kind of knew what the rules were and what the two-thirds were.
And the big battle of the legislature where the mean 15 were fighting it, and then finally one of them agreed to go over to the other side and get things passed. I mean, there was a lot of heat and energy around that.
Right. So they kind of avoided the real problem that time. They didn't pass a bill that was arguably in violation of the two-thirds rule because one of the assemblymen switched over. So it gave the assembly the 28-14 vote that it needed to make it a two-thirds bill, so it became kind of a moot point at that point. Nonetheless, the court had still ruled that the two-thirds rule must give way to the requirement to fund schools. So, but then that was a few years later in a case brought by Bob Beers, as a matter of fact, on one of his initiative petitions. That's when the two-thirds rule was reinstated. The old case was thrown out.
What is the path for this now? Does this go to district court first, or does this go to the Supreme Court?
This will go to district court first.
So that would be James Wilson's court?
It was assigned to Judge Wilson. I understand the attorneys for the plaintiffs had Judge Wilson removed, and I believe it's with Judge Russell now. But it is in Carson City District Court.
Okay, and so historically, looking at his rulings, where would you say that this goes now?
Well, it's
second guessing, of course.
I have learned to be very careful about ever guessing what a judge is going to do. It does seem like a pretty solid legal case to me about the two-thirds rule. When you look at other bills in the past that have extended sunsets or canceled extend rate decreases. They've been marked as two-thirds bills. The Commerce Tax bill was a good example of that. When they extended the sales tax, that particular section was labeled as a two-thirds. So I think there's some pretty good legal arguments on it. But you know what a court's going to do, you never know on these kind of things. It's going to be fascinating to watch. As a lawyer, I think the whole legal community will be watching this very closely and to see where it goes, because it's going to have a big impact in a lot of different areas. And if you go back to the Legislative Council opinion, it served as the basis for this whole lawsuit. The interesting thing is that it had two sections to it. It said that if you are canceling a scheduled decrease in a tax, that does not require two-thirds. And it also said if you cancel or remove an exemption to a tax, that does not require two-thirds. And we have a lot of exemptions to a lot of different taxes for various reasons, economic development reasons, social reasons, whatever. The sales tax has a lot of them. And so, you know, the opinion, if it kind of progresses, if it's upheld by the court, could have some much more serious impacts than just this last session.
All right, so give us a couple of examples, will you? Because certainly Senator Settlemyer brought this up when he was filing the case.
Yeah, he did. And you know, if you look at the sales tax, there's all kinds of exemptions in there. Like you don't pay sales tax on the gas that comes into your home, your electricity, your water, things like that. Those are statutory exemptions. There's medical exemptions. There's a variety of newspapers, for example, are exempt from the sales tax. All those kind of things are out there. So it's kind of an open question, I think, if this, where those kind of things might go in the future if the legislature determines to cancel some to try to get some revenue.
As you mentioned, when Governor Gibbons promoted this two-thirds tax situation, it was inherently political, as was Education First. Mm-hmm. Is it now the other side's turn for the Democrats to come back and say, we basically just want to invalidate the two-thirds rule so that we can, you know, as needed, as desired, pass taxes? Is that where we're heading?
I don't know what really the motivations are. It was interesting to hear the governor say that even if the lawsuit were to prevail, it wouldn't really impact the budget because there was enough money there. So
wasn't that surprising to you? It was surprising to me.
It was surprising. I thought that might be part of the political fight about it, and that kind of seemed like that took that off the board a bit. So, what the motivation was, if there is a motivation, or if it was just really a truly an effort to say, you know, we think that the two-thirds rule does not apply to these certain kind of things. Time will tell on those kind of things. But you know, you certainly see that the effect of it in a state that is getting more and more blue is it does kind of end up being one of the last things that the Republicans, when things are going very blue, that the Republicans can use to leverage some power.
I remember when Governor Gwynn raised a little bit too much tax money in one particular session. He was forced to actually reimburse the citizens of the state with a tax refund of $300 per person, and he told everybody who would listen that he got more thank yous for that $300 than anything he had done while he was in office.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, but I'll tell you, when I was with Governor Gibbons, and we hit the depths of the recession in 2007 and 2008, and the rainy day fund was emptied in the blink of an eye. It would have been nice to have some of that rainy day fund be a little bit bigger, because that can if a deficit hits, it hits hard on the state.
All right. So, just from your experience, if you were to put a number on what should the rainy day fund be, because Nevada was so devastated, what would that number be?
You know, it was when things hit in 2007 to 2008, the rainy day fund was at about $300 million. And it went down very, very fast. At that time, the general fund budget was at about $6 billion, and the state faced a $2 billion general fund shortfall. So, that's grown now. Obviously, our budget's even bigger than that. But I would say if you really were looking at from a very, from being very safe and cautious on these things, something like $1 billion rainy day fund would be ideal.
And yet, would still be inadequate if we were to have another situation as we had seen before.
If we had one as severe as before, it would be very difficult.
All right, let's take a break. Can you stick around?
Sure.
We'll keep it for the whole show. We'll be right back.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. Come visit Design Outdoor's store and backyard to see our wide selection of fire pits, barbecues, and pizza ovens, natural stone water features and fountains, and frostproof pottery. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
One of the most psychologically damaging things parents can do to children in divorce is disparage one another, which is why I can't believe I even have to make this commercial. Half of your kids' genetics come from this person you're spewing hate about. Your children have the right to love you both, but more than that, they deserve to love themselves.
Marilyn York might be a men's rights divorce attorney, but this is for every selfish parent. Shut up.
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. A lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Josh Hicks. He's a partner with McDonald Carano and the one before last chief of staff to Governor Gibbons. And because of the political times we're in, and I'm not talking about the tweets and all that. Well, I guess we could talk about the tweets and all that crazy stuff. But the political philosophy of Jim Gibbons was different than the state had been used to. There was a hierarchy in the state of people who have been running the state for the last 30, 35 years or more, and that was upset by Jim Gibbons being governor. He was a different kind of governor. He was not a get-along kind of governor, and he had certain philosophies that he abided by. And now with this two-thirds fight, we're seeing, you know, that philosophy coming out. And I think in some ways it's almost comparable to what's happening with the president. And I'm talking about on a political level, not on a personal level. So share with us, if you will, who was the real Jim Gibbons that you saw every day? Was he a stable, you know, hardworking governor? Was he a little wacky? I mean, was he really on the job every day? What were your thoughts of Jim Gibbons?
Well, I'd say, first of all, when you think about Governor Gibbons, you've got to think a little bit about some of the time, you know, that was happening then, and that colored a lot of things. 2007 was his first legislative session. That was kind of the last session of kind of the old traditional sessions where you had a Senator Raggio-controlled Senate and a Speaker Buckley-controlled Assembly. In 2009, that switched. It was the Democrats in both houses. The recession hit full force right after Governor Gibbons came in. He was going through some difficult personal issues with his divorce as well. And all those things made it very challenging. Nonetheless, the Governor Gibbons I knew was always a very dedicated person to the state. Very patriotic. You're talking about a guy who was a veteran of several wars, combat veteran, dedicated a huge part of his life to public service, and then just happened to come in as governor in some extremely challenging times, both fiscally and politically. So I think anybody would have had a very difficult time dealing with that. And I think that's a lot of why you saw the challenges you saw, and it ended up being a one-term kind of governorship. But when you took those pressures away and that difficulty, Governor Gibbons was the kind of guy you'd go out and have a beer with. You could talk about the guy was a big Nevada fan. I mean, knew everything, you know, about Nevada. You take that guy out in the desert somewhere, he could tell you everything about a rock, the animals, everything else out there. So,
and he had degrees in three different topics.
I mean, he did.
This was not a stupid man, even though he was portrayed at times in the media as such. That mm-hmm. there was no way that he was that. And I got to say right here, I was friends with him for many, mm-hmm. many years.
Yeah.
I mean, from his time in Congress, you know, and being in the media, I met him on multiple occasions. He was never shy to come on this program and never asked me for what the questions were going to be about prior to the interview, many, many more times than Governor Sandoval ever came on the program. And at this point, Governor Sisolak has a ways to go to catch up to him. So, you know, he certainly was much more media friendly. Although I think he was looking for fairness from the media, as Harry Reid was and Dean Heller was. But I think it's a shame that you know, none of us have had a chance to talk to him post his governorship.
Yeah, I think it'd be, you know, he's very much retired from public life and stayed away from the limelight. But I think it'd be great to have him come back, just like anyone who's had such a big mark on the state of Nevada. To come back and, you know, talk about their story and their perspective and give some of their wisdom to the leaders that are in office now.
He said to me several years ago, after he was out of office, "I just don't want to be the news anymore." I thought that was a very sad statement.
Yeah, his experience with the media as his administration went on became more and more contentious. And I think that really colored things for him.
Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Please come back soon.
Thank you, Sam.
All right. And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye catches its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Kenny, Dad? Why are you learning? This place is great.
Huh?
You gotta try this.
Wow, this stuff is great. People are gonna love it.
Yes. Yes, they were.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Pro Group Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. Pro Group Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
You can now watch Nevada Newsmakers on YouTube. Subscribe to our Nevada Newsmakers channel. We'll see you on the next broadcast.